For many years, Jana Frankova was the regular interpreter for President Václav Havel when he welcomed foreign visitors and travelled abroad. Frankova was one of the few Czechs of her generation to graduate from Oxford University, and following her return to Prague in the 1970s, she was harassed by the secret police for translating for Charter 77. She was also involved, she told me, at Radio Prague Studios with the Jan Hus Educational Foundation, a group of Western academics who provided underground support to intellectuals in Czechoslovakia.
I was actually the first person they contacted because I was the only person they knew here personally. And it was Stephen Lukes, who is a philosopher, who came to Prague. He stayed with us. The rule was that I wouldn't meet anyone of these people personally because I was meeting the people from England, later also from France, from Canada. So I was a sort of liaison officer or something like that, yeah. You'll probably already remember that in those days, in late 70s, early 80s, it was difficult for the British to take too much money in cash from Britain abroad. So they used to stay in my place. I mean, thanks to them, my kids speak English because there was nothing else to do for them, you know, if they wanted to get on terms with all these strangers who slept on this floor in our sitting room.
Were these people coming here to teach, or were they, in an underground way, or were they bringing illicit reading materials?
Their sort of main task was to organize classes for either Czech academics who lost their jobs, for people who would have liked to study, but they wouldn't be admitted for political reasons to the university. So this was the sort of core of their activities here. But they, of course, brought books, any other reading materials. They brought money to support families that with breadwinners who stopped winning the bread because they lost their jobs. So it was a whole bundle of activities they came here for.
Jumping forward a couple of years, I'm sure it must have been a turning point in your career when the revolution happened here.
I was already too old, so what could I do? I was very happy for my son. He was 14 then, and we had a very sort of heated discussion that year in January during the Palax week. And then in October, soon before the revolution, because he wanted to take part in the demonstrations. But he was brought up in such a way that he told me, and he discussed it with me. And I told him, look, I don't blame you that you want to go there. I would want to go there. But you already know why these English people keep coming here to our place. So if you were detained by the police, they would treat you differently than all the other kids you were with, because they would have something against me. And he was very unhappy. He was just starting the secondary school. I said, if you finish the secondary school, I'll do anything I could to get you out. And he said, I don't want to get out. I just want to be able to do what I want. This was the discussion actually in October. It was because there was a big demonstration on the 28th of October. And 3 weeks later, that was it, you know. And he was already not only a fresh student interpreting for his English teacher at the grammar school, but he was also interpreting for a number of TV crews because there was such a need for interpreters. And I was being asked by those I worked for, look, another team is coming, another crew is coming. Have you got anyone? I said, look, I haven't got anyone else than I already sort of sent to you. The only one is my son, but he's only 15. And they said, never mind, we take him.
I know you yourself interpreted for Václav Havel and his wife, Olga. Did you spend a lot of time with them? And what impression did Václav Havel in particular make on you?
Yeah, I did spend a lot of time with them because I interpreted for them not only here in Prague, but also on their trips abroad that are longer. They're just one afternoon. Václav Havel, well, he was not well-educated, let's say self-educated, but quite knowledgeable person, even though with scattered knowledge. but very eager to learn from anyone, whether, you know, whatever the other person knew. He wanted to know what you did and how you did it. And he was, at least at the beginning, you know, during his first term, very glad if he could sort of speak to people unofficially, because I think it took him quite a long time to get used to being the official person, you know, the political or state representative. And he didn't know, he wasn't sure how to behave, what was he supposed to say at certain moments. So he was glad if you sat down with him when the officials disappeared and he could just chat. And his wife, Olga, was a super ordinary woman, but with very normal, I don't know, view of the world, probably because she came from low middle class background, and she had very good perception of the people. She recognized if somebody was a crook, and she recognized if somebody was a honest person, even though, let's say, not a person who would, about whom you would think so at the very beginning. But she recognized it. She had this in check. We say she had a nose for that, you know.
How was Havel's English? Because I've heard tape of him speaking, and he spoke some English kind of haltingly, but I presume he understood quite well.
He understood quite a lot. And actually his English was, during those, I don't know, 12 years that I was working for him, was improving every year. I was quite surprised, because at first he did understand something, but he would use only the phrases, you know. Maybe he was just shy. Maybe he was so uncertain. But, yeah, he almost didn't speak. And then his English was improving sort of naturally. It was never right from the grammar point of view, but you could see that he picked up new and new words and new phrases. But he always, when he was interviewed, even if he could have actually answered the questions himself, he always wanted an interpreter. And I think the reason was that even when he was answering questions in Czech, it was a pretty complicated language, complicated constructions. And he wanted to concentrate on that. And I think he was, of course, aware of the fact that his answers in English would never be so sort of compact as they were in Czech.
I understand also that you, working with Havel, interpreted for some very well-known figures such as Margaret Thatcher,
yeah,
and Princess Diana. Did any of those world figures make a particular impression on you?
Actually, Princess Diana, not that I would be impressed. I mean, she was just a princess. But she was a nice girl, and she was a sad girl, very sad girl. She sort of clutched on to me when we were alone, and she wanted to talk about ordinary things. You know, you have two children, I have two children too. How did you respond if your son asked you this? You wouldn't have expected that, but I guess she didn't have anyone to ask. So it was easy to ask a woman who lived, you know, at the other end of Europe. But I felt sorry for her. It was strange, you know, feeling sorry for someone who has got such a high post. But then I found Shimon Peres was my favorite. You know, he is on the top of my pyramid of favorite politicians. He came here in 1990 as a minister of finance to our then minister of finance, Václav Klaus, to talk for the first time about the possibility of renewing the diplomatic relations with Israel. And he couldn't come officially because there were no diplomatic relations. So he came as a minister of finance to meet Minister of Finance. He then met Dubček, the MPs in the Federal Parliament, Havel, Prime Minister, all these people, unofficially. And he was so knowledgeable, so obviously intelligent, but open. For me, it was like a revelation. He was really great.
As well as Havel, you also interpreted for other Czech politicians. I'm wondering if, in all your experiences of interpreting for politicians, if you found yourself ever in any particularly difficult or delicate situations?
Difficult, yes, because it's always difficult to interpret for people who you don't know, who don't have any specific topic really to talk about, because it's always the sort of diplomatic chat. So that's what's difficult, because you have nothing to concentrate on. Delicate? Sometimes yes, because sometimes the politicians, when they speak to their counterparts, do not realize that there are certain things that sound different in Czech because of the Czech context than in the language you interpret it into because of the cultural context of that language. So then you have to be very careful to interpret sort of faithfully what was said, and yet use a language that wouldn't distort the words, but would make them acceptable for the other person. But that's always difficult, you know.